Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Mem Hey Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Hanachrima obdim et ha'arim ve'etagvaot." These non-Jews that worship the mountains and the high places, hein mutarin. Those mountains and high places are mutar. There's no restriction on them. They are not deemed to be avodah zarah. And Rashi says over here that you have the right then to quarry the stone from those mountains. You can graze your animals on those mountains. You can plant things on those mountains. There's no restriction whatsoever, but umashalehen asurim. Things that are on the mountain are considered to be asurim, shenemar, because the pasuk says in Parshat Ekev, psilei Elohehem tisrefun ba'esh, lo tachmod kesef v'zahav alehem, lakach talach, pen tivakesh bo, kitoavat, Hashem Elokecha hu, that there is a restriction to desire the gold and silver that are upon the Avodah Zarah, and that is Gzeirat HaKetuv, according to Rashi, that those things that are plating or sitting on the Avodah Zarah over here, which is not really Avodah Zarah, because the mountains and the high places are not deemed to be Avodah Zarah, nevertheless, the gold and silver that adorn them or plate them are still problematic, and they remain Asurim. Now, according to Rashi, the Shita that Rashi proposes over here, and the Ri and the Balei HaTosafot favor this view within the Mishnah, is that Rashi says that the Tana Kama believes that when it comes to the Harim and the Gvaot, they are not considered to be Avodah Zarah. And the proof that Rashi brings to that is the Gemara in Chulin that says someone who shucks the animal to a har, someone who shucks an animal for the mountain, it's not called Zivchei Mitim. It doesn't have the din of Tikrovet Avodah Zarah. And even though they are not deemed to be Avodah Zarah, someone who worships them will be subject to a death penalty because they are considered as if they are worshiping Avodah Zarah. But the pasuk tells you, despite the fact that they're deemed to be worshiping Avodah Zarah, and they will get a death penalty for doing such, nevertheless, they're not considered to be Avodah Zarah. And the implications of that are that the harim and gvot are not a surim because they are not avodah zarah. Nevertheless, there is a gzeirat hakatuv that says lo tachmod kesef v'zahav alehem, which teaches you the things that are on top of them or that plate them are deemed to be a surim, and that is the gzeirat hakatuv. So based on that, in summary, Rashi's shita is that the harim and gvot are not deemed to be avodah zarah. That's actually learned from the next pasuk in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yossi Aglili will bring. Number two is that someone who worships the har is still chayav mitah because they're worshiping avodah zarah, even though the har itself is not deemed to be avodah zarah. And if someone shechs an animal to the har, that animal is not considered to be zivchei mitim. The items that are on the mountain that are plating or attached to the mountain, the fact that they are asurim, despite the fact that the mountain itself is not avodah zarah, that's a gzeirat hakatuv of lo tachmon kesef v'zahav alehem. A slight variation of that could be the limud from the pasuk of lo tachmon kesef v'zahav alehem, which is that could also be the source for the fact that the harim and gvaot are not considered to be avodah zarah. The way we explain Rashi is that Rashi says that lo tachmod is a gzerat hakatuv that tells you the items on the har are asurim, and the fact that the harim and the gvaot are mutarim, that we learn out from the pasuk that Rabbi Yossi Aglili is going to bring in a minute. On the other hand, you could learn that that is learned out of the pasuk of lo tachmod. The pasuk specifically states lo tachmod kesef v'zahav alehem. The items that are on them are considered to be asurim, implying that the item itself is not asur, and that means that also could be possibly the source for the fact that the Tana Kama believes that the harim and the gvaot don't have a status of avodah zarah. That's the view of Rashi and the Ri and the Balei HaTosafot. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam argues on that position of Rashi, and he also brings a Lashon Acher, or Perish Acherim, that Rashi had. And you can see that in the parentheses that are in the Rashi with the Ot Aleph of the Gra, which seems to be an insertion in Rashi from that Perish Acherim. And the Rabbeinu Tam argues, because of the fact that someone who worships a mountain or someone who worships a giv'ah is put to death, that shows you that those items are avodah zarah. And so the way that they learn is that the mountain is avodah zarah, the gva'ot are considered avodah kochavim. The gzeirat hakatuv is that even though they are avodah zarah, they're still not asurim. So despite the fact that they have the shame avodah zarah, they are considered to be fine. And their proof is the fact that someone who worships them is put to death, as if they worshipped avodah zarah. So they say that that shows you that they are deemed to be avodah zarah. Despite the fact that they're deemed to be avodah zarah, nevertheless, they have a heter migzerat hakatuv. So for them, the gzerat hakatuv is the fact that it is mutar, despite the fact that it's avodah kochavim. The fact that the kesem and zahav are asurim is a pol yotzei, that anything on top of avodah zarah gets the status of Avodah Zarah, and as opposed to the mountains and the Gevaot, which have a dispensation that say, despite the fact that they're Avodah Zarah, they are still Mutarim B'Hana'ah, that dispensation doesn't apply by Zahav V'Chesef, and that's based on the Pasuk that says anything on top of Avodah Zarah is considered to be Asur B'Hana'ah. The one problem they have is the Gemara in Chulin that says someone who Shochet Lahar, someone who Shech something Lahar, it's not considered to be Zivchei Metim. According to them, it should be Zivchei Metim because the Har has a status of Avodah Zarah. There, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests that a Shochet Lahar means that when he's far away from the mountain, he's not near the mountain, he says he's Shochet Lahar, that doesn't have a status of Zivchei Metim, which is the main criticism the Ri has in the Rabbeinu Tam, because that doesn't make so much sense. Although there is an alternative explanation in the Gemara in Chulin, which means that Shochet Lahar is not shechting the Avodah Zarah, but he's shechting the animal for a particular purpose. He's shechting it to use it for medical purposes. He's shechting it to use it for the mountains or some sort of sorcery, whatever it is that he's shechting it for. That's what is meant by a Shochet Lahar over there. And that's why it's not considered to be Zivchei Metim. That's in order to solve that problem of how the Rabbeinu Tam deals with that Gemara. So you have two Gemarot that seem to weigh in favor of each position. You have the Gemara in Chulin, which seems to indicate that they're not called Zivchei Meitim when you're Shochet the Har, which implies that the Harim and Gvot are not deemed to be Avodah Zarah. And then you have the Gemara further on that says that a person who worships the Har is deemed to be an Oved Avodah Zarah and gets a death penalty, which seems to indicate it is Avodah Zarah or deemed to be Avodah Zarah. And that leads to this Machloket as to what's the status of the mountains. Are the mountains, like the Rabbeinu Tam and the other Peirush and Rashi say, deemed to be Avodah Zarah? There's just a Gzerda Katuv that they can't make them Asur. Or is it the other way around, that the Harim and Gvot don't have a status of Avodah Zarah because they have no right or no ability to make them into Avodah Zarah, despite the fact there's a Gzerda Katuv that anything on them is Asur, and a person who worships them gets a death penalty? So those are the two approaches to this position within the Mishnah. And now we have the position of Rabbi Yossi Aglili Omer. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says that the source for the fact that the Harim and the Gvaot are not classified as being Avodah Zarah comes from the pasuk that's found in Parshat Re'eh, Perek Yud Bet, pasuk Bet, Abei Ta'abdun et kol makomot asher abdu sham agoyim asher atem yoshim otam et Eloheihem al haharim haramim v'al gvaot v'tachat kol eitz ra'anan. And he darshens from that pasuk, Eloheihem al haharim, their gods that are placed upon the mountains that you have to destroy, v'lo haharim Eloheihem. On the other hand, the mountains themselves are not the gods, or they can't make them into gods. Elohim ala givaot, those idols or those items that are on top of the high places that you have to destroy. Plagvot Elohim. On the other hand, the gvaot are not classified as their gods. Again, the way Rashi is going to read that is means that literally they are not considered to be Avodah Zarah. The way the Rabbeinu Tam is going to read that is that they are, even though they're Avodah Zarah, you don't have an obligation to destroy them, and there's no Isser Hana. Umipnei ma ashera asura. But then Rabbi Yossi Aglili runs into a problem, because there were three items mentioned in the pasuk, which is Elohim al haharim, haramim, val gvaot, v'tachal kol eitz ra'anan. You have harim, gvaot, and eitz. When it comes to the harim and the gvaot, you have the drusha that indicates that the harim are not considered Avodah Zarah. The gvaot are not considered Avodah Zarah. Only the Elohim that are on them. But then what are you going to do with kol eitz ra'anan? Kol eitz ra'anan would imply that only things under the tree or near the tree would be problematic, but the tree itself should be fine. Yet we find in the Torah, both Parshat Ekev as well as in Parshat Re'eh, a requirement to destroy the Asherah, which is a tree. So that's what he is bothered by, and he says, "Mipnei ma Asherah asura." Why is it that the Asherah is problematic? Mipnei sheish bat tfisat yidei adam. That's because there's human intervention in it. Kol sheish bat tfisat yidei adam asur. Anything that has human involvement with it, that is considered to be asur. So over here, with regards to the harim and the gvaot, those are natural phenomena. They have nothing to do. They're not man-made. And therefore, they can't be oser them. That's the gzerat ha-katov, that those aren't asur, or that's the gzerat ha-katov, that one is not culpable, even though they do make them into Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, when it comes to a tree which has human intervention or human involvement in terms of the planting of the tree and making of the tree there, that does have the ability to be made into Avodah Zarah. And that's how Rabbi Yossi distinguishes between the harimic vote versus the Eitz Ra'anan, and that's why the Asherah has to be destroyed. Now, Rabbi Yossi's din makes a lot of sense, because otherwise we'd have a problem with individuals who worship the sun, who worship the moon. Then that would make it that the sun would be Asur B'Hana'ah, the moon would be Asur B'Hana'ah, that would be an impossibility, an implausibility for Bnei Yisrael to live by that. So his drusha makes a lot of sense. Now again, it could be, according to Rashi, that that is also the source for the drusha of the Tanakama, to the fact that the Harim Ikvot are Mutarim. According to the Raivid, that is not the source for the Tanakama, because the Tanakama learns that as a deal from Kesev Zav Alehem, but this is Rabbi Yossi's opinion as to the source for the fact that the mountains and the Gvo'ot are not considered to be Asurim, either not considered to be Avodah Zarah at all, or even if they are Avodah Zarah, they're not Asurim Behana'a. And then Rabbi Akiva comes along and makes an interesting comment. Amar Rabbi Akiva, ani ovin va'adun lefanecha. I will make you understand and explain in front of you. Kol makom shata motzei har givoa, giva nasa. Anytime you find a tall mountain or a high place, beitz ranan or a tree, dash yesham avodat kochavim. There will be Avodah Zarah in those locations. So Rabbi Akiva is addressing Rabbi Yossi Aglili and trying to answer his problem. He says that there is a dissonance in the pasuk between Harim Gvolt and Eitz. Why does Eitz have a different din than Harim Gvolt? So Bikiva says, you're reading the pasuk incorrectly. Just like Eitz in the pasuk can't tell you that the Eitz is mutar, because we know that the Asherot are problematic, then that's true by the Harim Gvolt as well. That's not what the pasuk is coming to teach you. The pasuk is coming to teach you, Abed Abdun et Kol HaMekomot, Asher Abdu Shem HaGoyim. Go and destroy all the places where they did or worshipped Avodah Zarah. Asher Toshim Otam et Eloheim. When you inherit those areas where they have their gods. Where are their gods found? Al Harim Ramim. Go look on those high mountains. Vala Gvolt. On the high places. Betachat Kol Eitz Ranan. And blow all the trees that are planted there. Those are the areas where you can expect to find Avodah Zarah. It's an indication of placement. It's not telling you the din that Rabbi Yossi Aglili said. Then we have to ask is how then does Rabbi Akiva know that the Harim are Mutarim and that the Gvaot are Mutarim? That is because the Torah only instructs you to destroy the trees. It says, Asherehen tisrifun ba'esh, or Asherehen tigadeyun. There are specific instructions when it comes to the trees to destroy them. There's never any instructions in the Torah to destroy the Harim and Gvo'ot. And that tells you that the Harim and Gvo'ot are not considered to be problematic, whereas the Eitzim are considered to be problematic, because the Torah demands that you destroy them, doesn't demand that you destroy the Harim and Gvo'ot. And that way, Rabbi Kiva solves that dissonance in the Pasuk that Rabbi Yossi Aglili had, which is why his eight's different than the other two items. But he also explains the pasuk then in a consistent manner, that the Harim and Gvo'ot and eight's are all telling you the same thing, which is where to find the Avodah Zarah, not what is not considered to be Avodah Zarah. The Bali Tosafot over here asks, wait, according to Rabbi Kiva's drasha, how did they build the Beit HaMikdash on a high mountain? That's one of the places where you'd expect to find Avodah Zarah, and an area where you'd have to destroy the Avodah Zarah that's there. The Bali Tosafot suggests that's because they had it al pi Navi. The Navi told them that that was the place and the location of where to build the Beit HaMikdash, and that's why it's exempted from this requirement to remove the Avodah Zarah, or the possibility of Avodah Zarah being there, which would be an inappropriate place for the Beit HaMikdash to be built. But I just want to also point out that what's interesting here is that Rabbi Akiva seems to be addressing Rabbi Yossi Aglili as if Rabbi Yossi Aglili is his Rebbe, because he says, "Av ovin v'adun lefanecha," seems to be that he's in front of Rabbi Yossi Aglili like a Talmud trying to say, let me help you or let me explain it to you. Although we find in many other places that Rabbi Yossi Aglili was actually a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. What the Bali Tosafot in the end suggests is, Venira, the Talmud Chaver Hayalo, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Akiva. Yossi Aglili was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, but he was a Talmud Chaver, which brought him into a peer status. Berach mimenu bishanim, and he was much younger than Rabbi Akiva. Despite that fact, Rabbi Akiva, when he spoke to him like a peer. And over here, Rabbi Anivut also spoke to him as if he was like a Rebbe to him, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, but they really speak in peer terms, and Rabbi Akiva is definitely older than him, was the Rebbe of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Now the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Hainu Tanakama. Is there really any difference between Rabbi Yossi Aglili and the Tanakama? Especially according to Rashi, who thinks that the Tanakama's source for the fact that the Harim Gvo'ot are not classified as a Avodah Zarah derives from the statement of Rabbi Yossi Aglili or from the Pasuk of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, then what's the difference between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi Aglili? We're going to have two opinions in the Amoraim, the first of which is Amarami Berchama, Amaresh Lokish, Sipui Har Kehar Igabenayu. A plating on the mountain is the difference between them. Tanakama Kama Savar, Tzipui Har, Eino Kehar. The items are plating the mountain that sit on the mountain are not considered like the mountain. And for that reason, when you worship the mountain, the mountain might remain okay, but the Tzipui Har is going to become a sur because they don't have the same status as the mountain itself, Umitzar. And therefore, it's going to be a sur. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, on the other hand, Savar, Tzipui Har, Kehar. The plating of the mountain has the same status as the mountain itself, and therefore, it is mutar. Just like the har and the giv'ah are not restricted, so too the tzipui har is not considered to be restricted. And for Rabbi Yossi Aglili, the pasuk of lo tachmol kesef v'zahav aleihem will refer to avodah zarah that's detached, not to avodah zarah that is attached to the ground, and that'll be the nafkamina between them. And even though we have a general principle that Tana Batra comes to be mosif, the Baal Tosafot points out over here that despite the fact that we have a principle that the latter Tana usually is adding on something to Chumrah, over here we are compelled by the Psukim to say this because of the fact that the Tana Kama brings a Pasuk that specifically states that Lo Tachmor Kesef V'Zahav Aleihem, that the planning on the mountains is the problem. And Rabbi Yossi, who doesn't mention that, seems to indicate that they have the same status as the Har itself. So most believe that the Tana Kama thinks that the gold on the Harim is decorative or annoying to the Avodah Zarah, and that's why it's restricted, because the Pasuk that's brought over here is speaking about things that are decorative on the Avodah Zarah, which is Psilei Elohim Tishvum Be'esh, Lo Tachmol Kesef V'Zahav Aleihem, which are the decorative adornments that are on the Avodah Zarah, that you shouldn't desire those. Those are restricted. So over here too, the Noyei HaHarim V'Agvo'ot are restricted because they are Noyei Avodah Zarah, and they don't have the same status as the Harim. The Baal Tosafot are bothered by that because of the Gemara in Chulin that we brought before that suggests that Tekrovet to the Harim and Gvaot are not Asurim. If Tekrovet to them is not Asur, how could the Noy of this Avodah Zarah be Asurim? Therefore, the Baal Tosafot claim that the restriction here of the Zahav and Kesef is because they worship the Zahav and Kesef, not because it is considered to be noy the Avodah Zarah. Kesh lamar the mari hocha b'tzipui ne'evad agav ahar, that it's worshipped along the mountain, l'kach asur l'tana kama. And that's why the Tana Kama says it's asur. The problem the Baal Tosafot have now is the pasuk that's quoted is not a pasuk that indicates the Kesef and Zahav was worshipped. It's about Kesef and Zahav, that is noy. So what the Baal Tosafot note is that the pasuk tells you that sometimes you have something that is asur, even though there are certain reasons to believe it should be mutar, and certain reasons to believe that it should be asur. So when it comes to the Kesef Zahav, that is on something that is talush, something that is detached, over there the Kesef Zahav is asur. Now, it's asur because it's upon something that is worship. On the other hand, it itself is not worship. So despite the fact that it itself is not worship, but it is decorative it, which means we have a chada li tivuta, chada le pishuta. You have one good thing and one bad thing, despite that fact it's considered to be asur. Similarly, when it comes to the Kesef V'Zahav that's on the mountains, even though they have one negative associated with them, which is the fact that they themselves are worshipped, the gold and the silver, nevertheless, they also have a tzad tivuta, which is that they're on top of something that's mechubar, something that's attached to the ground, which is not deemed to be Avodah Zarah. So what the pasuk is showing you, that sometimes, even though you have one thing that is positive, one thing that is negative, or one thing in its favor, one thing against it, we still say it's asur. So do over here. Even though the gold and silver have the benefit of being on the harim, nevertheless, they also have a negative, which is their worship. And for that reason, they bring the pasuk of Lo Tachmod Kesef Zahav, which gives example of that. It's not the exact same thing, but it is a similar example of that type of genre, something that has consideration to be asur and consideration to be mutar. And over there we say it's asur. So over here we're going to say that it is asur. Or the Baal Tosafot offer the possibility that the pasuk is just an asmachta and it's not the direct limud. And according to the Baal Tosafot, for sure, anything that is a noy, even the Tana Kama will agree, is not considered to be asur. Rav Sheshet, on the other hand, believes the Kuleyama Tzipuhar Enukehar. Both the Tana Kama and Rabbi Yossi Aglili believe that something that adorns the mountain, gold and silver that are on the mountain, they are considered to be Asurim. That which is attached to the mountain is not considered to be like the mountain. That means, according to the Baal Tosafot, if it's worship, it will be Asur, both according to the Tana Kama and Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Or according to the others that believe that's Noy, the Avodah Zarah, anything that adorns the mountains will be Asur, both halacha according to Rav Yosef Glili and the Tana Kama, because of the pasuk of Lo Tachmor Kesef Zahav Alehem. The halacha, the machlok between them is Be'ilan Shenat O Ulesof Avado. A case where you planted a tree with no intent to worship it, and then in the end you end up worshiping it, Kamiflagate. That is their argument. In this way, the argument between the Tana Kama and Rav Yosef Glili will turn out to be the standard format in a Mishnah, where the Tana Kama is the Kula and Rav Yosef Glili actually will be the Chumra. And Rashi notes that on the previous Amud, Tana Kama Savar Ilan Shinata O, but the Sofa of Do, a tree that is planted for whatever purpose you want, but the Sofa of Do, in the end, they end up worshipping it, Mutar. That is not problematic, because the tree takes on the same status as the Harim and Nigvot. Rav Yosef Glili Savar Ilan Shinata O, but the Sofa of Do, even if he planted the Ilan originally, not for the purposes of Avodah Zarah, but in the end worships it, Asur. That is Asur, and that's based on Rav Yosef Glili's comment that anything that has Tfisat Yedei Adam, anything that has human intervention in it, that is considered to be something that is subject to Avodah Zarah and doesn't have the din of Harim and Gvaot. And that means that as long as a human planted it, even though it takes root and it starts to look like a Har and a Giv'ah, nevertheless, that is not the case because you have human involvement in the origination of the tree. Whereas the Tana Kama believes, unless it was planted in particular for the purposes of Avodah Zarah, then it's not considered to be Tfisat Yedei Adam. Tfisat Yedei Adam is only when the person intervenes to make it Avodah Zarah from the outset. But if he doesn't do that, that will be considered like the Harim Gvaot, and it will have a status of being under the Gzeret HaKatuv that doesn't consider those items to be Avodah Zarah. Now Rashi goes out of his way in all these instances to point out that it's only true when he plants it as a garin, when he plants it as a seed, and then that seed grows into a tree. That's where you have the machloki between the Tana Kama and Rav Yosef Glili. On the other hand, you would be medayek from Rashi that if you planted it as a sapling, you uprooted a tree, moved the tree over, and you plant that tree not for the purposes of Avodah Zarah, that would not matter. And therefore, both according to the Tana Kama and Rav Yosef Glili, that would be asur. So Rashi says the only time you have this dispensation from the Tana Kama to say that it's not deemed to be Avodah Zarah is when you plant it from the outset as a seed for your own purposes and not for Avodah Zarah. But if you already plant it or move it as a sapling and plant that sapling Avodah Zarah, even the Tana Kama in that case would agree that it's asur. The Baalei HaTosafot asks a number of questions on that, and therefore they come to the conclusion, the Nira Lefaresh, the Vadaik Shenato Garin, the Kuliyama Shari. You plant it as a seed, everybody would agree. Even Rav Yosef Glili then would agree that it is mutar. Dein Zeh Tfisat Yad Adam. That's not considered to be human involvement. The human involvement's gone. You put the seed in, and then the seed sprouts. From the moment it began to root, it's already attached to the ground. He says that the Machaloket between them is Hakubin Ato Ilan Kamiflegeh. Question is, when you move it as a sapling, you plant the tree as a sapling for the purpose of Avodah Zarah, that's where you have the machloki between the Tana Kama and Rav Yosef Glili. The Tana Kama believes that that's not considered to be Tfisat Adam, because after you move the tree and you replant it, it takes root in the ground, and therefore it's like the Har and the Giv'ah, and you can't make it a sur. On the other hand, Rav Yosef Glili believes that when you move it as a tree, that in and of itself, their rooting afterwards, doesn't change the fact that it was Tfisat Yedei Adam, and for that reason, it can become a sur, or it can be subject to the din of Asherah. And even though you don't have any proof to the fact that when you plant it as a seed, that is considered to be mutar, Baalei HaTosafot say, v'yesh lomar d'achi lo tzarich kra. You don't need a pasuk for that. The vadai sharu, the lo nafki melechlal harim. Because then it's no different than a har and a kiva. Kevin shloya b'hem tzvised yedeh dami olam. Because there was no human involvement with this tree from the moment the seed was put in. When it began as a tree already, it grew naturally, and that is the same as Arimik Va'ot that is considered to be attached to the ground. And the same will be true for a tree that grows by itself. It'll be subject to that same heter of harim and gvot, because it'll be dome l'harim and gvot. Rabbi Yosef Glili savari lunch and I told myself abdo asur. Imai, how do you know that? I mean, tani seifa, because that's what he says in the Mishnah. It's because there's human involvement. Because Rabbi Yosef could have just concluded this statement by saying, Mipnei she'yesh bat tfisat yedei adam, to tell you that because there's human involvement, that's why the Asherah is Asura. So then why, because she'yesh bo tfisat adam Asur, why did he add in the additional phrase saying that anything that has human involvement is considered to be Asur, as if he's adding something else to it? And that is, because she is supposed to be said that dam le tuye mai, what does that come to include? Lavli tuye ilan shenato but the sofa vado. Isn't it coming to include a case where it's an ilan that was originally for no purpose of Avodah Zarah, and then later on gets repurposed into being Avodah Zarah, and that's Asur, and that's how Rav Yosef Glili is differentiated in the Tana Kama, As we noted before, that's what Rashi says over here. Now, Rabbi Yosi Galili is more chamor than the Tanakama. Ba'af Rabbi Yosi bar Rabbi Yehuda Savar. He also, Rabbi Yosi Rehuda believes, Ilan shenaf to ublasof avado asur. An Ilan that was originally planted for no particular purpose or for any mundane purpose. Ublasof avado, in the end, he worships it avodah zarah, it's asur. The Tanya, we have a bright, Rabbi Yosi bar Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mitoch shenemar Eloheim al harim below harim Eloheim Eloheim al gvot below gvot Eloheim. The same drasha that we saw from Rabbi Yosi Galili. Shomei ani takat kol etz ranan Eloheim below etz ranan Eloheim. I would have continued then to darshan the pasuk. The problem that Rabbi Yosi Galili has is that then you would have continued. The next step would mean that things that are found under the tree, that is considered to be avodah zarah, but the tree itself is not considered to be avodah zarah. Talmud Omar, the pasuk says in Parshat Re'eh, "Minitatzdem et mizbechotam, mishibartem et matzevotam." So you see there's a requirement to eliminate the trees. Then what am I going to do with the part of the pasuk that says that things that are under the trees are considered to be avodah zarah, not the trees themselves? That comes from the purpose that Rabbi Akiva noted in our Mishnah. Damar Rabbi Akiva, ani ovin vadun lefanecha, koma kom shata mutze har givoa v'giv anas'a, ve'etz ranan dat sheisham avodat kochavim. That these aren't coming to teach you the din of Rabbi Yosi Galili, but rather to give you indications of places where you're going to find the avodah zarah that you need to destroy. And as Rashi notes over here, how do we know that Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda in this din over here is telling you that an ilan, shenat o, the sof avado is asur? He never makes that statement. He just says that I have a problem with the pasuk, and then he repurposes the pasuk to what Rabbi Akiva suggests. So Rashi notes over here, he wouldn't have needed to do that. And he should have explained the pasuk and say, Mitoch shenem ravlo yitzranah anelo ehem, meshomeni akol asherot mutarot. I would have thought all asherot are mutarot, olam omar v'ashrayim tisrafun v'esh. And that's what asherayim tisrafun v'esh would come to teach you, that if it's worshipped up front as a avodah zarah, it would have been problematic. But if it was already planted in the ground, it would not be problematic. So that would have been the way that he should have phrased it, and he would be able to explain the puzzle. The fact that he doesn't do that shows you that he believes that an etz shenato, the sof avado, is asur. And now he has a problem, because then what's the puzzle coming to be matir for you? And if you're going to tell me that you can use the puzzle to be matir things that grew by themselves, both according to the Baya Tosaf, or things that were planted by Garin originally from the outset by a human being and then left to grow, in those cases they are mutarim. So maybe that's what the pasuk is speaking about. You don't need the pasuk to teach you that, because those are exactly like the harim gvaot. Just like the harim gvaot are bechuber the karko, or part of the karko, therefore you don't need that pasuk to teach you that information. And so that's how we know that Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda has the same shita as Rabbi Yosi Galili, which is that an eitz shenato l'tchila, lo l'shem avodah zarah, and then was repurposed to avodah zarah, is considered to be asur. Those that argue on Rabbi Yosi bar Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi Galili and say that if you planted it originally not for the purpose of avodah zarah and later then co-opted it for avodah zarah, that it's mutar, what do they do with the pasuk? They need it for a tree that was planted from the outset for purposes of avodah zarah. Rabbi Yosi bar Rabbi Yehuda, nami b'vayilei lohochi. Doesn't Rabbi Yosi bar Rabbi Yehuda also need that pasuk to teach if it's planted originally for avodah zarah that it's asur? Hakanami, you're right. He does need it for that. Then how does he know the source for the fact that if you have an ilan that was planted for fine purposes and then later co-opted into avodah zarah, that is asur? He learns that from the pasuk that's found in Parshat Ekev, which says, Ki im ko tasu lahem izbechotehem titotsu, umatzeibotam tishabeiru, va'asharehem tigadeyun. You have to cut down the asherot, upsilehen tisrafun ba'esh. So over here you have another pasuk that has a requirement of the destruction of the asherot. Ezu eitz shegid'o asur v'ikaro mutar. Where is there a tree where the growth or the trunk or that which came afterwards is problematic, but the ikar, the core of the tree, is fine? That's a tree that was originally planted at the outset, but not for the purpose of avodah zarah, and then later was used for avodah zarah. So that which came afterwards is problematic. So there you have to cut that down. The original trunk or base or roots are not problematic because they weren't planted to avodah zarah. So then, ashrehem tisrefun ba'esh, to destroy them completely, is speaking about a tree that was planted from the outset for the asherah, for avodah zarah. A case of a tree that was later worshipped, over there you can leave the core of the tree there. You just have to cut off everything afterwards because of the fact that they did worship it for Avodah Zarah afterwards. And that's why you have two psukim. Gemara says, well, wait a minute. That's a nice drasha. V'ha ashereihem tisrufun be'eshka nasibla talmuda. In the Braita, that's not the pasuk he brings. He doesn't bring v'ashereihem tigadeun. He brings the pasuk ashereihem tisrufun be'esh. The Gemara says, this is what it means. Ilo no ne'amar kamar. Had it not said. Ilo no ne'amar tisrufun be'esh. Had it not had the pasuk of your requirement to burn it. Hayti omer. Then I would have learned, because it's the lesser of the chidushim, to tell you the requirement of cutting down the tree is associated with someone who planted the tree originally for Avodah Zarah. Now that I have the other pasuk, which teaches me about a tree that is planted originally for those purposes, that pasuk now is extraneous, and I can use that pasuk of Asherem Tigadeyun to teach you that when you have a tree that was planted originally for no Avodah Zarah purpose and later made into Avodah Zarah, that that's also asur. V'rabonan hai v'asherem tigadeyun ma'av dilei. What do they do with v'asherem tigadeyun? L'kedar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Dem Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Gidu'ei avodat korkovim kodmim l'kibush Eretz Yisrael. Kibush Eretz Yisrael kodem l'viur avodat korkovim. They use it for the limud of Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi that there are stages in the process of the conquest of Eretz Yisrael. That is that there is an immediate requirement that when you enter into Eretz Yisrael, b'asherem tigadeyu, you cut down the trees, you gotta get rid of the Avodah Zarah immediately. Then you have to conquer Eretz Yisrael, and then only after you've conquered Eretz Yisrael, you have to go back and then completely obliterate or wipe out the Avodah Zarah that you cut down originally. So you destroy the Avodah Zarah on the way in, and that's the first requirement. Then you conquer Eretz Yisrael. After the conquest, then you go back and tisrufum beish, you destroy it completely. The Tani Rabbi Yosef, because Rabbi Yosef says, it says in Parshat Re'eh, and he tats them in mizbechotam, mishibartem in matzevotam, vashereem tisrufum beish, psuleyem tigadeyum, vibatem et shemam in a makom ahu. So then it says, he tats them mizbechotam, vanach. You should uproot their mizbechot and leave them. Mishibartem et matzevotam, vanach. And then you should break their matzevot and leave them. V'anach, salkadatcho, how can you just leave them? Sreifa boi, they require to be burnt, they require to be eliminated completely. Now he's learning that out from the contrast in the pasuk between nitatzdem and mizbechotam, shibartem matzevotam, whereas it says ashrehem et tisrufum beish. So the fact that it doesn't require it by the first items that are mentioned in the pasuk shows you that there's no need for sreifa. The Gemara says, what do you mean there's no need for sreifa? First of all, what about the fact that you can't leave these takalot of Avodah Zarah around? And number two is, the pasuk in Parshat Ekev says, psilei Elohim tisrifun, that you have to burn them up. So the answer to that is, amaravuna redolf v'achar kach srof, that you have to chase them down, meaning that you do the conquest first, and only afterwards you come back and burn them. And so there are actually two stages in the destruction of the Avodah Zarah, the first of which is to destroy it, and then you go and conquer the land, and then only afterwards you come back and eliminate it completely. How does Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda have this svara that there are two stages in the destruction and the uprooting of the Avodah Zarah? Because he used the pasuk of Asherem Tigadeyun and Asherem Tisrum Beish, he used that for his limud already. Nafkalei mi'abeid ta'abdun. Because it says in the beginning of the pasuk, abeid ta'abdun. Abeid ba'achar kach ta'abdun. First destroy it, and then come again and destroy it again. So what are the two stages of the Abeid Da'abdun? That there are actually two actions that are required here. There's a destruction up front, and then there's a secondary destruction, which is a follow-up destruction to eliminate it completely. For Rabbanan, what are Rabbanan going to do with Abeid Da'abdun? They say that that comes to teach you that when you are destroying Avodah Zarah, you can't just destroy it, you must uproot it completely. Not like when you cut down a tree and then you leave the roots or the trunk there. You not only have to cut down the tree, you have to uproot it completely in order to get rid of it. Similarly over here with the Avodah Zarah, it's not enough just to destroy it, you must uproot it completely. Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda l'sharei shacharei aminolei. Where does Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda have that din or learn that din that you have to go and uproot it completely? Nafkalei, he learns that out from the end of the following pasuk, which is nitatzeh mizbechotam shibartem matzevotam sherem tishuvum beish. So vibadetem et shemam min makom ahu means you need to eliminate their name completely, wipe it out completely. Rabbonan hau lechanot l'ashem. They use that to teach you that you should change the names of the areas which were complementary towards the Avodah Zarah into degrading or negative names. Tanya, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Minayin Lo Kero Avodat Kochavim Shatzarech L'Shareish Achareha. Where do you know the fact that if you destroy Avodah Zarah, it's not enough? You need to uproot it completely. Tamar Lo Mar V'Ibadetem Et Shema. Amar Lo Yerbi Akiva. Halo Kabar Ne'amar Abed Ta'abdun. Why do you need V'Ibadetem Et Shema? You already have the pasuk of Abed Ta'abdun. This is like the limud of the Chachamim. In game, Tamar Lo Mar V'Ibadetem Et Shema Mina Makomahu. So for Rabbi Akiva, who learns that out of Abed Ta'abdun, what does he do with the pasuk of V'Ibadetem Et Shema Mina Makomahu? L'chanot l'ashem, that you have to give it a degrading name, or you have to change its name to be something negative. Yochol l'shevach, you would think you change the name to something complimentary. Shevach sachadatcha, why would you change it to something complimentary? Eliyachol lo l'shevach lo l'gnai, you would give it a neutral name going forward. Tamar lomar, the pasuk says in Parshat Ekev, shaketz tishaktzenu v'taev titavenu kicherem hu, that you have to despise it. It has to be an abomination or abominable in your eyes, because it's something that's off limits. Ha, Ketzad. So then how do you give it a name that has that feeling or that sentiment towards it? Ayu Korimota Beit Galia. If they used to call it the place that is revealed or the place on high, Korinto Beit Karya. They changed the name to Beit Karya. Instead of being something that's high and open, as Rashi says, Lashon Chafira Vishvelut. Something that is a excavation or something that's deep down or low down. Like we find in Parshat Mishpatim with the digging of a bore, it says koreh. So here, karya means to dig or excavate. Ein kol, something that is the apple of everybody's eye or revealed to everyone or within everybody's sights. You change it to ein kotz. You change it to a thorn in your eye. And that is the meaning of the pasuk, and that's the way that the Rabbanan learned that pasuk of v'ibadetem et shemam. Now, the Baalei Tosafot do point out over here that Rabbi Akiva all of a sudden seems to be taking up the position of the Chachamim. Whereas in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva is supportive of the position of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, and he seems to be tomeich, support that position of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. The Baalei Tosafot suggests that Rabbi Akiva clearly in the Mishnah is supportive of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, v'leilo svirle, but he doesn't hold that way. Well, that is a little difficult because Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda in the Braita before, when he said that he doesn't want to be darshing this way, then he opts to go into the shita of Rabbi Akiva. And over there, it seems to be that's Rabbi Akiva the shita though, and not him saying Rabbi Akiva in shita at Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. But the Baalei Tosafot say in the end, that's what you're going to have to say, that when he spoke and said, when Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is quoting Rabbi Akiva, he's not quoting Rabbi Akiva of his own opinion, but he's quoting Rabbi Akiva, who explained Rabbi Yossi HaGlili in the Mishnah. Okay, we're going to stop here, 8 lines down on the top of Memvav Amud Aleph.